Hello and welcome to episode 72 of the Artist Empowerment Radio Podcast. I am Bob Baker, your humble host. So if you have any interest whatsoever in creating children's music, this is the episode for you. But hold on, even if you have no interest in creating music for kids, you're still going to get a lot out of this great interview with Mr. Billy. Now, Mr. Billy is an artist who exemplifies the sort of DIY ethic. This guy is a dynamo, and you're going to learn a ton of information no matter what your genre. Before we dive into that interview, I would like to ask a favor of you. If you could, I would really appreciate it if next time you are logged into iTunes, you go to the iTunes store, go to the podcast section, and find Artist Empowerment Radio. You can search for Artist Empowerment Radio, and I think even Bob Baker Podcast will bring it right up. And I would really appreciate it if you would rate the podcast. And while you're there, leave a comment too. Because the more ratings that it has, the more comments that it has, the more likely people will find it and be inspired to subscribe and listen. So I'm trying to spread the message. If you like what you hear and you'd like others to also benefit from these words of wisdom, I would appreciate you doing that. One other thing I'm doing with this episode is I am adding a podcast question line where I encourage you to call and leave a specific comment or question, and in future episodes, I'm going to try to get to as many of those as I can and address them, but here's the number, and don't worry if you're not able to write this down because you're driving or jogging or something while you're listening, it'll be in the show notes on the webpage, but the number is 512-827-0505. Then when prompted, enter extension 5160 followed by the pound sign, and then you'll be given a list of instructions on how to leave your message, and you can re-record it if it's not right or whatever. But I would really love to hear your comments and your questions on the podcast and be as specific as possible, and I'll do my best to answer them in future episodes. Of course, I'll be running your audio on the episode as well, assuming it's succinct and detailed and all that good stuff. So anyway, without further ado, let's jump into that interview with Mr. Billy. Where in the world is Hey, Bob Baker here, live on the scene near my home in St. Louis, Missouri, with a special interview. And I am here with a gentleman whose actual name is Billy Grizak, but as a musical artist, he goes by Mighty Mr. Billy. Is that correct?
The Mighty Mr. Billy.
The Mighty.
Yes, you have to have the in there.
Not just any Mighty
no,
Mr.
No,
Billy.
I am the original.
Now, Mr. Billy and I have actually, you and I have been in communication with each other by email for a number of years, and we just met for the first time. We are at a St. Louis bread company, which in other cities across the country is known as Panera. But this is. But I just found out prior to our, you know, we had a little conversation before the recording started, that you actually came across my work and bought an early version of the Guerrilla Music Marketing Handbook about almost a decade ago?
That's right, about 10 years ago, right about the same time I started writing and performing for children. Made the switch from, you know, adult rock and roll to kids rock and roll. I was at my local music store, and it was there on the bookshelf. And I said, wow, I got to have this. And I've pretty much worn it out.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. And who knows what version that was, or what it said about the internet back then?
I don't think it mentions the internet. Yeah. It says something about stone tablets and chisels, I think.
Exactly. intimated there that you are a children's music artist, and I think you're celebrating 10 years now of being on that path.
Yep.
So let's get a little quick background. Where's home for you, Mr. Billy?
I live in a little suburb by Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I'm originally from New Jersey. I'm from the East Coast.
Okay, because
I used to talk like this, but I don't talk like this anymore because people don't understand it when I talk like that. Yeah. So I had to, living in the Midwest, I had to change my speaking.
Right, and they get the kids artists from New Jersey, maybe they have a different flair.
Yeah, yeah. it's cool. Yeah.
But you actually come from your family background. There's a lot of music.
Yeah, we're actually going into our what's close to 100 years of music pretty soon. My grandfather was a big band leader back in Philadelphia, and my father was a semi-famous jazz musician, played with Dizzy Gillespie and Stan Getz, and did charts for Rosemary Clooney, and that's George Clooney's mom, for those of you that don't know. And my mother was a lounge singer, and then there's me, and then my son and daughter both play music now, and they even tour with me, and my son does session work and records, so my wife plays and sings. So yeah, it's like some people have farms, you know, is the family business, and my business, our business has been music. That's what we do.
That's awesome. You're carrying on that tradition. So what was it that, I know you were kind of like, and we're similar age, and I know we're kind of rockers from the 80s.
Totally.
You know? and so what would cause you to go into the children's music genre?
Oh my gosh. Well, I was playing in rock bands, touring all over, and I had some success as a college act. We had a band called Billy Zack and the Attack. I believe they still have their CDs on my CDs on CD Baby. Please notice those are not for children.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we were big in the college circuit, and then I had some health issues. Mm-hmm. And I left that, and the only thing I was qualified to do except flip burgers was do marketing, because I was marketing myself for 20 years before that. So I just got into building websites, and people asked me to make websites and help them market their businesses. And then after doing that for a couple of years, my voice came back, my hands were healed, I had a lot of surgeries and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And then my son, who was 5 at the time, took me to show and tell.
At school, right?
At school. And he brought me in as his show and tell.
The preschool, I guess it would be.
It was kindergarten.
Been. Yeah, okay.
5 years
yeah.
old, yeah. And I just sang rock and roll songs to the kids because I didn't know any kids' songs. My kids listened to rock music when they were 5. And the teacher said, "You're really good at this. You should do this for a living." And I took her seriously, and I sold my business, and I jumped right into it, and I've been doing it for 10 years.
Wow. Well, the reason I was really thrilled that you contacted me when you were in the area, and the reason I wanted to interview you is because I noticed from our corresponding over the years and watching you that you... Yeah, you've been very proactive at pursuing this, and you mentioned that you actually did marketing, and so you obviously embrace this whole marketing topic, and I know you've applied it a lot to your kids, your music career over the past decades. That's what I want to sort of dive into a little bit, is how you've promoted yourself, your... And so what was the marketing company? What type of marketing did you do prior?
It was internet marketing and website design. So
was
really
it for businesses of all kinds?
Businesses of all kinds. I mean, at one time, because it was so new, the internet, mm-hmm. I actually was doing like most of the websites for. At the time, I was living in Wyoming. That's where my wife is from, and I actually ended up becoming like the state webmaster for a while.
Wow.
And I was doing you know, the Wyoming websites and then all the businesses, and then I moved the business to Wisconsin. When we moved there, and only did it for about a year there, but I did everything from, you know, pet stores to people that do like oil rigging, you know, whatever, you name it, name a business, I probably did it.
So this background in music, I mean, it had to come in handy, and maybe that's the first thing I want to. Because a lot of musicians, one of the reasons I think my books will always be a demand for them is because creative people of all kinds are always confused by marketing and promotion and sales, and they just it mystifies them. But so you obviously embraced it to begin with. So how important is that for artists to I mean, you don't have to run your own company and making pet store websites to be able to do this, but what's the importance of just embracing the marketing side of this?
Well, it's all marketing. I mean, if you want to sell anything, you have to market it. And marketing doesn't mean selling. People, I think, have a big misconception, the difference between selling and marketing. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, you know, selling is picking up the phone or walking and saying, "Hi, would you like to buy this from me? Would you like to book me or get my CD?" And nobody really likes doing that. Mm-hmm. Marketing, I think, is creating awareness to the point where people will come to you and ask you if they could buy your product or hire you. So I think, I love that. I love people calling me.
Right.
So I do everything I can to position myself so people will call me so I don't have to call them. Because believe it or not, people say I'm a great salesman, but I don't like selling.
Right.
I like taking orders. It's kind of like McDonald's. You know, they're the biggest chain in the world, and they have no salesmen. They just have order takers. They do such a good job marketing. People go right to their place without
right.
having to be sold. And the only thing you have to do is say, "Would you like fries with that?"
Yeah, and talk about a place that markets to kids, too.
Absolutely. You know, you can learn a lot. Yeah. And I think it's a good idea, you know, is kind of make a game out of it. Look at what's successful in the world, not just what other musicians are doing. I think that's a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Look at successful businesses. Look at McDonald's. Look at realtors. Look at anybody that's doing something interesting, the Apple Store, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, look at who's really really successful. What can I do kind of like right. that? You know, and you address that a lot. I mean, it's, you know, you see what people are doing right and do that, you know?
Right. It's not always about the specific tactic. It's like, how can I apply this concept at my level for what I'm doing?
Right.
Even when you point out things that major labels or pop stars are doing, you know, the knee-jerk reaction is, well, sure, it's easy for, you know, Rihanna or somebody because they're, you know, but still, you can take the concept of what they're doing and apply it to your own level, you know?
Absolutely, you know. I don't try to reinvent the wheel. I think that's another mistake people make. What I do is I see what wheels are out there working really good, and then I try to make them 10% my own.
Right.
I figure once you change it 10%, it's yours.
Right.
So, you know, with, like, my social media work or my marketing work, you know, I don't really have to invent it. I just got to see who's doing something cool or you know, make sure you subscribe to the right podcast, read the right books, Bob.
Yes, indeed. So you're a student of marketing too. So you not only ran a company, but you also, you know, you have some of your favorite authors. And,
oh my gosh. Well, see, that's the thing, you know. Some people's hobby is music and then marketing's their business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm kind of the opposite. It's like music is my business and my passion, but like my hobby is marketing. And like some of my favorite authors are Seth Godin. I love anything he writes, I'm there, you know. Bob Baker, you know, always reading Bob Baker, whether it's online or,
thank you very much.
And important podcasts like the CD Baby podcast. I live for that podcast. It's a great one. And also people in other markets that do information. Like I listen to like internet marketing podcasts, have nothing to do with music, or the Get It Done guy, Steve Robbins, you know. There's a lot of people out there for great information. And you know what people say to me? I don't have time for all this. But you know what? If these days, if you have an iPhone or a smartphone and you download all this, you can download books. I have, you know, audio books. I've got podcasts. I got your podcast.
Yeah.
I put them in the car and, you know, I'm on tour. And if you're a touring musician, what do you want to do? Sit in the car, you know, and be bored? I don't know what you do in the car. Why not use it as your classroom? You know, I mean, in a 2-hour drive, a 5-hour drive, you could learn something new that's going to help you sell some more CDs or book some more gigs.
Actually, yeah, they just call it a university on wheels.
That's it, man. I mean, that's one of the secrets to my success is using my downtime.
Right. So I know this particular interview will be of interest, particularly to children's people interested in pursuing children's music. But I think there's still a lot to be learned, no matter what your genre is. But let's talk a little bit about kids' music specifically and some of the obstacles that you had to overcome. Mm. The same thing applies to children's music as opposed to same thing with children's books. And I deal with a lot of authors too.
Sure.
But it's a unique market in that. The person that you're writing for is not necessarily, or is definitely not the person who's purchasing it. It's kind of you got to come at it from different angles because the music is for the kids. Let's also talk about the importance of selecting an age range too, which I think is really important. But the real question you have to ask yourself is who's going to be purchasing it, right?
Right. I call that knowing the difference between, you know, your target audience and your end user.
Yeah.
You know, my target audience is whoever I want to buy it. In which case it could be a parent, or I do a lot of work with schools, so I want to get schools interested. And my main, like if you have an 80-20 rule thing for me, 80% of my focus is on the libraries.
Okay.
You know, because that's really where they still purchase physical CDs. Think about it. You know, in this world, everybody says the CD is dead, and everybody's downloading, and Spotify is going to take over the world and all that. But
right.
I'm selling more CDs than I've ever sold in my life because I found a market that still actually wants the physical unit.
Libraries,
right, because they have to loan it, and they're not totally online yet, so for the next however many years, I'm still going to be selling product. Plus, children want to hold things.
Right.
And so I make my CDs very colorful and attractive to the children, so they go, Mommy, I want this one, you know, and then they take it home and they hold it. So whatever you're selling, whether it's, you know, music for grown-ups or kids, you have to know who's going to buy it and ultimately who's going to use it.
Right.
And so you almost have to do a balancing act between the two, and it's challenging, but it's fun. At least I think it's fun. Maybe somebody else would not think it's fun, but I like a good challenge.
So that's because I guess most other genres, the end user and who's going to buy it, are quite often the same person, unless it's a gift item, you know, type of thing. So
so
children's music is unique in that regard. It would seem like it would be I guess most genres are hard to break into, but did you find it, I mean, did it take a couple of some years for you to gain some traction in it?
You know, actually, I have a really unique situation. I was, like I said, my son got me into it, and I decided to do it right away. Now, where I was locally, there was only one other person that actually played kids' music. So I didn't know any about her, so I just kind of jumped into it with 2 feet. And the fellow that, the other person that did it in my area also was very old school. No internet, no social media, no marketing. It was just, you know, guy with the guitar, and, you know, people would call him on the phone and he'd go play. And he'd been in the area for 18 years. And I kind of jumped in with my, you know, business mindset and my rock and roll mindset. Plus, I had sold my company. I had no money.
Right.
And I decided that my family needed to eat and I needed to pay my mortgage. So I was desperate to get work immediately. So I pulled out all the stops. I called every radio station, every TV station, and found out TV loves local celebrities that are new.
Right.
And I was all over for like 6 months. I was like on all the TV shows. I was in every newspaper. I was doing all these high profile things. And in less than a year, I was playing all the same shows and making the same money as the guy that was at it for 18 years.
Wow.
And I remember when he came to me one day, he said, "Mr. Billy, don't you sleep?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, it took me 18 years to get these gigs and make this money. How do you do it?"
Wow.
I said, "Well, I had to eat."
There's something to be said for
desperation. You need to have a goal. You need to have a purpose.
And also just being proactive, too, just taking action and trying. A lot of people write, "Who am I?" You know, but it's just you don't know until you act and ask, right?
I think more people are afraid of rejection than they are of success.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not afraid to talk to anybody. Bet you can't tell that.
Yeah, I'm getting that sense here from our conversation.
And so, you know, I'll talk to anybody, and if I have anything I can do to help anyone, I love helping people. It's, you know, I don't mind being told no. It's not personal. So, you know, I would just, and I love emails for that, though, because that way, I do actually, to be honest with you, about, again, 80% of what I do is all through email.
Mm-hmm.
I use that for everything. Sometimes I'll book shows, sell product. I've never met the people. Even right. You, I mean, we've only spoken once, and I think it was when during a conference call of Dirk Sivers.
Yeah.
And all of our other correspondents have been through email all these years.
Yeah.
So that'll give you an example, you know.
I knew exactly who you were.
Yeah, absolutely. You were walking up, I knew you. Yes, we were waving at each other. Hey, you know. So. But I think a lot of people are afraid of rejection. I think my best advice is get over it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Life is too short.
Too short,
Chad. Jump in.
Totally.
So let's also talk about your genre. I know a lot of kids artists tend to be of the folky variety and the Puff the Magic. Well, Puff the Magic Dragon is more psychedelic, I guess.
I guess, you know, yeah. But the start of the kids' music, the Peter, Paul, and Mary stuff. Yeah.
Or was it? Okay.
Yeah, it's people like Hat Palmer, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Tom Chapin. There's Raffi.
He was a big...
Yeah, really big one. And it's, you know the type. And nothing against this. Please don't take it the wrong way if you're listening and you happen to be wearing a Hawaiian shirt and some jeans and Earth shoes and own an acoustic guitar. No offense, that's groovy.
Yeah.
You know, no problem. But there's a lot of people been doing that for a lot of years. And when I started doing this, I didn't know what I was doing, honestly. You know, there's something to be said for, like, being clueless.
Ignorance.
You know, ignorance is bliss, because I went to my son's school and I said, you know, what songs do you want to hear? And they were asking me for AC/DC songs and Kiss songs, you know, the 5-year-olds, right?
Well,
and so that's what I played.
And that's what you knew, right?
That's what I knew. And I said, this is great. And then the research started, because I think it's important that you need to know who your competitors are, direct and indirect. A lot of people don't know the difference between that, but it was important for me to know who I was competing against and what they did. So I went to the library one day, I love this story, and I walked into the poor library and I said, "Hi, my name's Billy, I want to be a kid singer. Do you know any other kid singers? How do you do this? How do you get into the business?" And she was so nice and sweet, and she told me about all the other performers and even kind of what the price ranges were and how the libraries work, and she gave me some CDs to check out, and she actually booked my first show.
Wow.
And so I have a special place in my heart for the library, so I always, you know, do a lot for libraries, because that was my start. So, to answer your question, once I found out that there was nobody playing at that time, now remember, this is 10 years ago, nobody had an electric guitar, and they were all folk singers. Now, things have changed radically, because now there's kindy music, which is like alternative bands and rock people like Ralph Covert, you know, Ralph's World, and the list goes on. I mean, there's just tons of these people now that are like rock and punk and alternative bands playing music for kids. But I was kind of a pioneer in my area. I was like the first guy. Nobody knew what it was. And everyone seemed to be really excited. There was somebody playing rock and roll in schools and libraries, willing to play an electric guitar. And I got the first choice at a lot of jobs because I was different. I was unique.
Yeah.
I was, in the words of Seth Godin, a purple cow.
Yeah, you stood out. And also, I think the cool thing about that is not only did it appeal to the kids, but it also appealed to the adults that were booking you. And so there was something for both of those audience, stylistically at least. They were like, oh, I can relate to this music.
And when I started writing songs, I tried to write songs that would have some type of musical familiarity for the grown-ups so they wouldn't be bored. Because I would go to other kids' singer shows when I was starting to kind of get a gauge for what I was expected of me.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important. Whatever you're going to do, I think you need to go see what everybody else is doing. Another thing a lot of people don't do enough of, shadowing or stalking, whatever you want to call it. I would watch parents at a lot of these older shows, not older shows, folk style shows. At the folkier shows, a lot of times the parents would look maybe a little distant. Maybe they weren't participating. Maybe they were checking their email, whatever, instead of being engaged in the show. So I try to make music that the parents are going to dig and they'll think it's really cool. It might be kind of familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids like it too. And that way the parents and the kids can have a wonderful experience together. That's one of my goals, is to bring the kids and the parents together to have a great time.
Then do it through music.
Yeah.
With kids' music, how important is it to have a specific age range that you're writing for and catering to?
It depends on your purpose. My age group that I cater to primarily is, say, between preschool and maybe 4th, 5th, 6th grade.
Mm.
Okay, so, you know, I usually say 2 to 12.
Right.
You know? And if I'm doing a particular CD or a show that's for younger kids, I have to make sure that I'm using their language and it's at the tempo that they like and all that.
Right.
If it's an older thing, I have to be hipper.
Right.
And, you know, it has to sound a little bit more like, you know, not that I do Justin Bieber, but, you know, the Bieber crowd is going to think it's still cool.
Right.
And but I do try to do a lot of things that the parents and kids will like. And lately, what I found out is there's been this great bridge. Suddenly, the Beatles are huge because of Beatles Rock Band. So all the kids, little kids, teenagers, they all love the Beatles now. And the parents love the Beatles. So actually, on my last two CDs, I've recorded Beatles covers with my originals. We've done Octopus's Garden, we've done Back in the USSR, and next year we're doing, or the next CD, we're doing Hard Day's Night. Beatles songs go over really great with little tiny kids up to grown-ups.
Wow, cool.
And also on the new CD, we're also going to cover a Kiss song, because I found out that all of a sudden the parents love Kiss and the kids love Kiss. It's the weirdest thing. So I like Kiss, so it's a no-brainer for me.
Yeah.
So adding some covers now, it's something I didn't do in the beginning because I played covers for like 20 years and I was tired of it. But now I do a few covers, but you still got to make sure you're doing things that the kids are interested in. Like, I need to write an Angry Birds song.
Yeah.
Oh, you know? That'd be because from 5 years old to 15 years old, they all love Angry Birds. I try to find things that are a little bit more wide appeal for me.
Right.
You know, but some people micro-niche it. You know, they just do songs for toddlers. They just do songs for, you know, elementary. They just do songs for middle school. I try to put a little bit of everything that's... the stuff that's little is not too little. The stuff that's big is not too big, so I can kind of capture as many people as I can, still being in the kid genre. Another long answer, sorry.
That's quite all right. We're not going to be short on details here. Yeah.
Where in the world am I?